Chapter 4. Awaken him, I say, although on account of a capital conscience and an easy digestion, he slept well. By the profound interest of a story about a rat and a black cat, I think, which he was narrating all in an undertone, of course, to her sister. When the day broke, it so happened that this history was not altogether finished, and that Scheherazade, in the nature of things, could not finish it just then, since it was high time for her to get up, and be bolstering a thing very little more pleasant than hanging, only a trifle more genteel. The king's curiosity, however, prevailing, I am sorry to say, even over his sound religious principles, induced him for this once to postpone the fulfillment of his vow until next morning, for the purpose, and with the hope of hearing that night how it fared in the end with the black cat, a black cat, I think it was, and the rat. The night having arrived, however, the lady Scheherazade not only put the finishing stroke to the black cat and the rat was blue, but before she well knew what she was about, found herself deep in the intricacies of a narration, having reference, if I am not altogether mistaken, to a pink horse with green wings, that went, in a violent manner, by clockwork, and was wound up with an indigo key. With this history the king was even more profoundly interested than with the other, and, as the day broke before its conclusion, notwithstanding all the queen's endeavors to get through with it in time for the bowstringing, there was again no resource but to postpone that ceremony as before, for 24 hours. The next night there happened a similar accident with a similar result, and then the next, and then again the next, so that, in the end, the good monarch, having been unavoidably deprived of all opportunity to keep his vow during a period of no less than 1,001 nights, either forgets it altogether by the expiration of this time, or gets himself absolved of it in the regular way, or what is more probable, breaks it outright, as well as the head of his father confessor. At all events, Scheherazade, who, being lineally descended from Eve, fell heir, perhaps, to the whole 7 baskets of talk, which the latter lady, we all know, picked up from under the trees, in the Garden of Eden. Scheherazade, I say, finally triumphed, and the tariff upon beauty was repealed. Now, this conclusion, which is that of the story as we have it upon record, is, no doubt, excessively proper and pleasant, but alas, like a great many pleasant things, is more pleasant than true, and I am indebted altogether to the Cicernet for the means of correcting the error. Lemieux, says a French proverb, est l'ennemi du bien, and, in mentioning that Scheherazade had inherited the 7 baskets of talk, I should have added that she put them out at compound interest until they amounted to 77. My dear sister, said she, on the 1,002nd night, I quote the language of the Cicernet at this point, verbatim, why dear sister, said she, now that all this little difficulty about the bowstring has blown over, and that this odious tax is so happily repealed, I feel that I have been guilty of great indiscretion in withholding from you, and the king, who I am sorry to say, snores a thing no gentleman would do, the full conclusion of Sinbad the Sailor. This person went through numerous other and more interesting adventures than those which I related. But the truth is, I felt sleepy on the particular night of their narration, and so was seduced into cutting them short a grievous piece of misconduct, for which I only trust that Allah will forgive me. But even yet it is not too late to remedy my great neglect, and as soon as I have given the king a pinch or two in order to wake him up so far that he may stop making that horrible noise, I will forthwith entertain you and him, if he pleases, with the sequel of this very remarkable story. Hereupon the sister of Scheherazade, as I have it from the Cicernet, expressed no very particular intensity of gratification. But the king, having been sufficiently pinched, at length ceased snoring, and finally said, hum, and then, ooh. When the queen, understanding these words, which are no doubt Arabic, to signify that he was all attention, and would do his best not to snore any more, the queen, I say, having arranged these matters to her satisfaction, re-entered thus, at once, into the history of Sinbad the Sailor. At length, in my old age, these are the words of Sinbad himself, as retailed by Scheherazade. At length, in my old age, and after enjoying many years of tranquility at home, I became once more possessed of a desire of visiting foreign countries. And one day, without acquainting any of my family with my design, I packed up some bundles of such merchandise as was most precious and least bulky, and, engaged a porter to carry them, went with him down to the seashore, to await the arrival of any chance vessel that might convey me out of the kingdom into some region which I had not as yet explored. Having deposited the packages upon the sands, we sat down beneath some trees, and looked out into the ocean in the hope of perceiving a ship, but during several hours we saw none whatever. At length I fancied that I could hear a singular buzzing or humming sound, and the porter, after listening a while, declared that he also could distinguish it. Presently it grew louder, and then still louder, so that we could have no doubt that the object which caused it was approaching us. At length, on the edge of the horizon, we discovered a black speck, which rapidly increased in size until we made it out to be a vast monster, swimming with a great part of its body above the surface of the sea. It came toward us with inconceivable swiftness, throwing up huge waves of foam around its breast, and illuminating all that part of the sea through which it passed, with a long line of fire that extended far off into the distance. As the thing drew near, we saw it very distinctly. Its length was equal to that of three of the loftiest trees that grow, and it was as wide as the great hall of audience in your palace, O most sublime and munificent of the caliphs. Its body, which was unlike that of ordinary fishes, was as solid as a rock, and of a jetty blackness throughout all that portion of it which floated above the water, with the exception of a narrow blood-red streak that completely bejirdled it. The belly, which floated beneath the surface, and of which we could get only a glimpse now, and then as the monster rose, and fell with the billows, was entirely covered with metallic scales, of a color like that of the moon in misty weather. The back was flat and nearly white, and from it there extended upwards of six spines, about half the length of the whole body. The horrible creature had no mouth, that we could perceive. But, as if to make up for this deficiency, it was provided with at least 80 of eyes, that protruded from their sockets like those of the green dragonfly, and were arranged all around the body in two rows, one above the other, and parallel to the blood-red streak, which seemed to answer the purpose of an eyebrow. Two or three of these dreadful eyes were much larger than the others, and had the appearance of solid gold. Although this beast approached us, as I have before said, with the greatest rapidity, it must have been moved altogether by necromancy, for it had neither fins like a fish, nor web feet like a duck, nor wings like the seashell which is blown along in the manner of a vessel, nor yet did it writhe itself forward as do the eels. Its head and its tail were shaped precisely alike, only, not far from the latter, were two small holes that served for nostrils, and through which the monster puffed out its thick breath with prodigious violence, and with a shrieking, disagreeable noise. Our terror at beholding this hideous thing was very great, but it was even surpassed by our astonishment, when upon getting a nearer look, we perceived upon the creature's back a vast number of animals about the size and shape of men, and altogether much resembling them, except that they wore no garments as men do, being supplied by nature, no doubt, with an ugly uncomfortable covering, a good deal like cloth, but fitting so tight to the skin, as to render the poor wretches laughably awkward, and put them apparently to severe pain. On the very tips of their heads, were certain square-looking boxes, which, at first sight, I thought might have been intended to answer as turbans, but I soon discovered that they were excessively heavy and solid, and I therefore concluded they were contrivances designed, by their great weight, keep the heads of the animals steady and safe upon their shoulders. Around the necks of the creatures were fastened black collars, badges of servitude, no doubt, such as we keep on our dogs, only much wider and infinitely stiffer, so that it was quite impossible for these poor victims to move their heads in any direction without moving the body at the same time, and thus they were doomed to perpetual contemplation of their noses, a view puggish and snubby in a wonderful, if not positively in an awful degree. When the monster had nearly reached the shore where we stood, it suddenly pushed out one of its eyes to a great extent, and emitted from it a terrible flash of fire, accompanied by a dense cloud of smoke, and a noise that I can compare to nothing but thunder. As the smoke cleared away, we saw one of the odd man animals standing near the head of the large beast with a trumpet in his hand, through which, putting it to his mouth, he presently addressed us in loud, harsh, and disagreeable accents, that, perhaps, we should have mistaken for language, had they not come altogether through the nose. Being thus evidently spoken to, I was at a loss how to reply, as I could in no manner understand what was said, and in this difficulty I turned to the porter, who was near swooning through a fright, and demanded of him his opinion, as to what species of monster it was, what it wanted, and what kind of creatures those were that so swarmed upon its back. To this the porter replied, as well as he could for trepidation, that he had once before heard of this sea beast, that it was a cruel demon, with bowels of sulfur and blood of fire, created by evil genii as the means of inflicting misery upon mankind, that the things upon its back were vermin, such as sometimes infest cats and dogs, only a little larger and more savage, and that these vermin had their uses, however evil, for, through the torture they caused the beast by their nibbling and stingings, it was goaded into that degree of wrath which was requisite to make it roar and commit ill, and so fulfill the vengeful and malicious designs of the wicked genii. This account determined me to take to my heels, and, without once even looking behind me, I ran at full speed up into the hills, while the porter ran equally fast, although nearly in an opposite direction, so that, by these means, he finally made his escape with my bundles, of which I have no doubt he took excellent care, although this is a point I cannot determine, as I do not remember that I ever beheld him again. For myself, I was so hotly pursued by a swarm of the men vermin who had come to the shore in boats, that I was very soon overtaken, bound hand and foot, and conveyed to the beast, which immediately swam out again into the middle of the sea. I now bitterly repented my folly in quitting a comfortable home, to peril my life in such adventures as this. But regret being useless, I made the best of my condition, and exerted myself to secure the goodwill of the man-animal that owned the trumpet, and who appeared to exercise authority over his fellows. I succeeded so well in this endeavor that, in a few days, the creature bestowed upon me various tokens of his favor, and in the end even went to the trouble of teaching me the rudiments of what it was vain enough to denominate its language. So that, at length, I was enabled to converse with it readily, and came to make it comprehend the ardent desire I had of seeing the world. Washish squashish squeak, Sinbad, hey diddle diddle, grunt unt grumble, hiss, fiss, whiss, apostrophe said he to me, one day after dinner, but I beg a thousand pardons, I had forgotten that your majesty is not conversant with the dialect of the Cockneys.
So the man animals were called, I presume because their language formed the connecting link between that of the horse and that of the rooster.
With your permission, I will translate. Washish squashish, apostrophe and so forth. That is to say, I am happy to find, my dear Sinbad, that you are really a very excellent fellow. We are now about doing a thing which is called circumnavigating the globe. And since you are so desirous of seeing the world, I will strain a point, and give you a free passage upon back of the beast. Apostrophe, when the Lady Scheherazade had proceeded thus far, relates the Isitsornet, the king turned over from his left side to his right, and said, it is, in fact, very surprising, my dear queen, that you omitted,
Hitherto, these latter adventures of Sinbad. Do you know I think them exceedingly entertaining and strange? The king having thus expressed himself, we are told, the fair Scheherazade resumed her history in the following words. Sinbad went on in this manner with his narrative to the caliph. I thanked the man-animal for its kindness, and soon found myself very much at home on the beast, which swam at a prodigious rate through the ocean, although the surface of the latter is, in that part of the world, by no means flat, but round like a pomegranate, so that we went so, to say either uphill or downhill all the time. That I think was very singular, interrupted the king. Nevertheless, it is quite true, replied Scheherazade. I have my doubts, rejoined the king, but, pray, be so good as to go on with the story. I will, said the queen. Continued Sinbad to the caliph, swam, as I have related, uphill and downhill until, at length, we arrived at an island, many hundreds of miles in circumference, but which, nevertheless, had been built in the middle of the sea by a colony of little things like caterpillars. Said the king. Leaving this island, said Sinbad, for Scheherazade, it must be understood, took no notice of her husband's ill-mannered ejaculation. Leaving this island, we came to another, where the forests were of solid stone, and so hard, that they shivered to pieces the finest tempered axes with which we endeavored to cut them down. Said the king, again, but Scheherazade, paying him no attention, continued in the language of Sinbad. Passing beyond this last island, we reached a country where there was a cave that ran to the distance of 30 or 40 miles within the bowels of the earth, and that contained a greater number of far more spacious and more magnificent palaces than are to be found in all Damascus and Baghdad. From the roofs of these palaces there hung myriads of gems, like diamonds, but larger than men. And in among the streets of towers and pyramids and temples, there flowed immense rivers as black as ebony, and swarming with fish, that had no eyes. Said the king. We then swam into a region of the sea, where we found a lofty mountain, down whose sides there streamed torrents of melted metal, some of which were 12 miles wide and 60 miles long, while from an abyss on the summit issued so vast a quantity of ashes that the sun was entirely blotted out from the heavens, and it became darker than the darkest midnight, so that when we were even at the distance of 150 miles from the mountain, it was impossible to see the whitest object, however close we held it to our eyes. Said the king. After quitting this coast, the beast continued his voyage until we met with a land in which the nature of things seemed reversed, for we here saw a great lake, at the bottom of which, more than 100 feet beneath the surface of the water, there flourished in full leaf a forest of tall and luxuriant trees. Said the king. Some 100 miles farther on brought us to a climate where the atmosphere was so dense as to sustain iron or steel, just as our own does feather. Said the king. Proceeding still in the same direction, we presently arrived at the most magnificent region in the whole world. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.